To KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
KBOO is loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. And help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, healthcare, and career services to local communities. Membership information at ulpdx.org.
I am originally from the south of Spain, from Andalusia, but I have been living in Germany for 8 years already. I work as a journalist. I've actually always worked as a journalist. I got a call to join the first TikTok team at DW, Deutsche Welle. And then 1 year after, I got a call from the Thomson Reuters Foundation, which is my current employer, to co-launch a TikTok channel for Openly, our global LGBTQ plus news brand.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. A trans judge fights the UK top court's woman definition in the Euro court. A gay Jamaican refugee is freed from US ICE custody. And queer news TikToks into the future. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Montague.
And I'm David Hunt.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 23rd, 2025. The United Kingdom's first transgender judge is taking her country's Supreme Court ruling on the legal definition of woman to the European Court of Human Rights. The decision that the Equality Act 2010 refers only to biological women specifically excludes transgender women, even those who have been legally identified as women with formal gender recognition certificates. Victoria McLeod left the bench last year and is now a litigation strategist at the private law firm W Legal. She's complaining that the UK Supreme Court refused to hear testimony from her or any other trans individuals or advocacy groups before determining in April that only female assigned at birth women are legally women. The justices did consider submissions by several so-called gender-critical groups, including Four Women Scotland. That's the group that originally challenged the Scottish government's recognition of trans women as women in gender-quota-required legal panels. Backed by their Supreme Court win, Four Women Scotland is now suing the Scottish government for refusing to act on the decision, particularly targeting trans students and prison inmates. The UK government has reacted to the High Court decision by drafting legislation to restrict the rights of trans women in several areas of public life. The Trans Legal Clinic is supporting McLeod with a historic legal team. Its founder and executive director, Olivia Campbell Cavendish, is the first black trans lawyer in the country, and Oscar Davies is the first openly non-binary barrister. They're arguing that the UK Supreme Court refusal to hear trans people testimony violates the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 6, Guarantee of a Fair Trial. They also cite the liberty guarantees in Articles 8 and 14. McLeod says that she's been denied essentially the rights to respect for who I am, my family, my human existence, my right to a fair trial in matters determining my own freedoms and obligation without discrimination. We are told we must use dangerous spaces such as male changing rooms and loos when we have female anatomy. We are searched by male police to protect female police from, I assume, our female anatomy. If or when the Euro Court will hear McLeod's case remains to be seen.
U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement must immediately release gay Jamaican refugee Ricardo Anthony Kelly by order of a federal district court judge. ICE agents detained Kelly in New York City while he awaited a routine appointment seeking asylum. He was formally taken into custody after he refused an offer of $1,000 to self-deport. That's an unsociably small payoff to return to Jamaica, where Kelly had been shot 10 times in an attack motivated by his sexual orientation. In his initial writ of habeas corpus petition, Kelly wrote that he came to the U.S. on a tourist visa in 2021 following that incident, and subsequently applied for asylum. U.S. District Judge Annalisa Torres wrote in her August 15th ruling, "In light of the undisputed facts, there is no doubt that ICE's ongoing detention of Kelly, with no process at all, much less prior notice, no showing of changed circumstances, or an opportunity to respond, violates his due process rights." Kelly fears that remaining in custody could lead to severe and quite possibly fatal medical complications as a 40-year-old diabetic. He describes the conditions in the ICE facility as unconscionable, inhumane, and horrific. Judge Torres concluded, "The suggestion that government agents may sweep up any person they wish and hold that person in the conditions in which Kelly was held, without consideration of dangerousness or flight risk, so long as the person will, at some unknown point in time, be allowed to ask some other official for his or her release, offends the ordered system of liberty that is the pillar of the Fifth Amendment." Hundreds of almost exclusively non-white asylum seekers have allegedly been unconstitutionally detained without due process by the Trump administration. Department of Homeland Security spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin denies the charge. Like some detainees, Kelly has a pending minor legal offense. When asked about his case, McLaughlin asked a courthouse news reporter, "Why does the media continue to peddle sob stories of these criminal illegal aliens?"
A student-sponsored charitable drag show on the campus of West Texas A&M University was unconstitutionally banned, this according to the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The August 18th decision overturns a lower court endorsement of University President Walter Wendler's unilateral cancellation of the production mounted by the LGBTQ student group Spectrum WT. The appeals court wrote, "Because theatrical performances plainly involve expressive conduct within the protection of the First Amendment, we find the plaintiff's drag show is protected expression." Wendler canceled the fundraiser for queer youth suicide prevention in March of 2023, writing that drag shows stereotype women in cartoon-like extremes for the amusement of others and discriminate against womanhood. The lawsuit on behalf of Spectrum WT was filed by the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. FIRE supervising senior attorney J.T. Morris told the press, "This is a victory not just for Spectrum WT, but for any public university students at risk of being silenced by campus censors."
Books found to be suspect under Florida's expanded Don't Say Gay law will be returned to classrooms and school library shelves. U.S. Federal Judge Carlos Mendoza of the U.S. Middle District Court of Florida rejected key provisions of the state's HB 1069, which added books to the original prohibition on classroom discussion of sexual orientation or gender identity in public schools through high school. The law banning so-called obscene literature is so vaguely worded that some school districts have purged major literary classics, such as works by Shakespeare and even the dictionary. Disappeared books have also included classics like The Color Purple, Slaughterhouse-Five, The Handmaid's Tale, and Beloved. Many of the targeted books explore LGBTQ or racial justice themes. Mendoza plainly said, "None of these books are obscene." Penguin Random House leads a consortium of major book publishers, joined by writers' rights groups PEN America and the Authors Guild, and parents in the Escambia County School District that have challenged the constitutionality of the book's ban. In Judge Mendoza's words, the restrictions placed on these books are thus unreasonable in light of the purpose of school libraries. Authors Guild CEO Mary Rasenberger's celebratory press statement said in part, "Book bans don't just censor words on a page, they silence authors' lived experiences and deny students access to the stories that help them navigate an increasingly complex world."
Finally,
how low can you go?
Having lost one in the courts, Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis is taking it to the streets. Local officials in more than 24 cities across the state have been ordered to remove their LGBTQ Pride rainbow crosswalks. Echoing Federal Department of Transportation policy, DeSantis proclaimed, "We will not allow our state roads to be commandeered for political purposes." Crews came out in the dead of night to paint over the rainbow crosswalk leading to the Pulse nightclub memorial in Orlando, where 49 queer and allied patrons were mercilessly gunned down in 2016. Orlando's Democratic Mayor Buddy Dyer called the rainbow removal a cruel political act that has devastated the city. More than 100 people used chalk to restore the rainbow colors to that crosswalk the following day. Progressive young Florida Democrat U.S. Congressman Maxwell Frost called the state's action an act of vandalism in the middle of the night, and just like the ICE agents terrorizing our communities, wear the masks because they know they're not proud of what they're doing. That's why they did this in the dead of night. Orlando State Democratic Senator Carlos Guillermo Smith shared photos on social media of people restoring color to the crosswalk, captioning them simply, "We will not be erased." Smith was encouraged by a cosmic message, posting, "Just a few minutes ago, we looked up into the sky and there was not one, but there were two double rainbows, which is a reminder that the universe is with us."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 23rd, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt. Stay healthy.
And I'm Sarah Montague. Stay safe.
This is Terrence Stamp, Bernadette in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on This Way Out.
Rest in peace, Mr. Stamp. Rest in power, Bernadette.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
Listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
The world is turning away from traditional news sources, but it's not that easy to know what to trust in the changing media environment. This Way Out's David Hunt kicks off his old disco-era platforms to talk about social media platforms like TikTok with one queer journalist who's learning to build trust and an audience online.
The news media is changing, primarily because people have changed where and how they look for news and information to make sense of the world. Daily newspapers and network news programs are on the decline. Social media platforms continue to grow in both audience and engagement. That's created challenges. First and foremost, an alarming amount of disinformation competes for the internet's eyes and ears. But there are opportunities for truth-telling as well. I'm David Hunt. Join me as I explore some of the challenges and choices confronting the news industry, and meet one reporter who's harnessing the power of social media to tell the stories of LGBTQ people around the world. A new style of reporting at an organization whose very name is synonymous with traditional journalism. In a YouTube video produced a few months ago, Enrique Anarte sits in the backseat of a van, surveying the desert landscape along a lonely stretch of highway leading to Walvis Bay. The city is home to Namibia's only natural deepwater harbor and about 100,000 residents, many of whom work in the port and fishing industries. Anarte is a correspondent at Context, the Thomson Reuters Foundation's journalism platform, and Openly, its LGBTQ news site. He traveled to the west coast of Africa to document the experiences of one of the area's residents, a transgender woman named Ruan, a sex worker taunted when she sought care at a local hospital. In the video, Anarte picks up the story.
At 18, she suffered an acid burn that led to her deciding she'd never return to a state hospital again.
The male nurse was like, why are you like acting like a girl while you know you are a boy? And it started to become like I'm on a comedy show because everybody's now laughing while the nurse is busy attending to me.
Ruan told us the nurse pointed to her genitals while bathing her as proof of her real gender and then cut her hair under the auspices of treatment, even though the burn was on her arm.
It was just a horrifying experience. And that's when I decided I'm not going back to any state facility.
Right. Yeah.
The reporting is personal and engaging, focusing on Ruan's steely resolve and quiet dignity in the face of stigma and harassment, and presenting her experiences in the larger context of Africa's efforts to meet the medical needs of LGBTQ people, especially those at risk for HIV. At a time when financial aid from the United States is on the chopping block. The reporting is notable for other reasons. Anarte is based in Berlin, not Africa. He's a gay reporter whose beat is LGBTQ news. His coverage area? The entire world. His tools are social media platforms, YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram, among others. I sat down with him, remotely of course, to discuss his career path, the new tools of an old trade, and the stories that have meant the most to him.
I am originally from the south of Spain, from Andalusia, but I have been living in Germany for 8 years already. I work as a journalist. I've actually always worked as a journalist. And for the past few years, I have had the privilege to specialize both in covering LGBTQ plus topics globally, but also to experiment with, let's say, new, a little bit more creative social first, social video formats.
In fact, Anarte is what Thomson Reuters calls its first TikTok lead, its first reporter to seriously and consistently engage with a generally younger, queer, digital native audience on a platform that allows the journalist to build a following and put himself at the center of the coverage. In the past 3 years, he's reported on some of the most pressing issues facing the LGBTQ community, including far-right extremists targeting pride parades in Germany, efforts to ban queer online content in Indonesia, and the oppression of queer people in Russia. How did Anarte become one of the most visible queer journalists on social media? It started, as a lot of things did, with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Until the pandemic, I was purely a text journalist. We were all locked down at home. You know, a lot of people were doing yoga. My boyfriend loves yoga, and I hate yoga. Nothing against the people, but I do not enjoy it. My brother's girlfriend reached out to me, and she was like, there's this new app. People are doing lip syncs. We can try it out together. And I was like, why not? Like, anything that's not yoga, I'll fully embrace it. And so we started like doing like trending sounds to make funny videos on TikTok. And after a while, she got bored of it. But I started experimenting to make content that was funny and was like totally like amateur, like normal person, let's say, not professional at all, but that conveyed some sort of information or educational angle when it came to two main topics. One of them, European Union politics and LGBTQ plus rights, which was sort of like the thing I loved covering the most as a journalist. And that totally blew up, like video started to go viral, and mostly not just, it wasn't that much about virality, because I think virality is a double-edged sword, but it was about the reaction from the community online and a kind of engagement and a relationship with the audience that I didn't have as someone writing articles, right? So that is when, after a few months doing that, I got a call to join the first TikTok team at DW, Deutsche Welle. And then 1 year after, I got a call from the Thomson Reuters Foundation, which is my current employer, to co-launch a TikTok channel for Openly, our global LGBTQ plus news brand. And eventually I joined TRF full time. So yeah, that's kind of like how it all came together.
I don't want to leave you with the impression that Anarte's career is just a hobby that went viral. He's a seasoned journalist with more than a decade of experience covering Spanish politics, international affairs, and the arts, with a focus on human rights and gender issues. And he has a master's degree in European Union studies and an undergraduate degree in international relations and foreign languages. If his visibility, his personal brand, on TikTok brought him to the attention of the people at Thomson Reuters, his track record as a journalist and proficiency in 5 languages made him a smart hire.
It's very easy to say build your brand, but A, like, does everyone have the time to do that? And B, are all employers ready for their employees actually having a brand? Because having a brand means having a voice. And I think especially in the journalism industry, which has at least formally always been very conservative when it comes to formats, when it comes to how things should be done and have been done forever and ever, I think it can be tricky sometimes. And many employers, I think, are not ready and are only now catching up. It's hard to like really separate the person from the brand at some point. I understand why some people might have concerns about that, but I think it is a reality of journalism today. And it's either we embrace it or we, you know, miss a train.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, talking with journalist Enrique Anarte, a correspondent at Context, the Thomson Reuters Foundation's journalism platform, and Openly, its LGBTQ news site. Perhaps now would be a good time to give a bit of background on Anarte's employer. The Thomson Reuters Foundation is the charitable arm of Thomson Reuters, one of the largest and oldest news-gathering organizations in the world. Reuters is no stranger to technological innovation. At its founding in 1851, the news service used carrier pigeons and an emerging technology, the telegraph, to deliver the latest news to subscribers in London and beyond. The charitable foundation, established in 1983, offers a range of initiatives and services that defend media freedom, foster more inclusive economies, and promote human rights. It's the world's largest provider of pro bono legal support for independent media, and a source of independent news analysis on topics like climate change and LGBTQ rights. And even though it's embracing new tools for storytelling, it maintains rigorous editorial standards, something you can't always count on in today's chaotic media environment.
Everything is fact-checked. There's always, we always reach out if a government is criticized. That position of that government is always there in a way or another. So we're not like giving up on our journalism standards. We're just like telling it in a new way. A big part of my journalism is totally traditional. And I also make funny TikToks that have the same editorial standards than the other formats.
I asked Anarte what tough question he would ask himself if he were conducting this interview.
What is our place in this new world where people are not just getting information from us, but from content creators, governments, companies, NGOs, that not anyone can go to TikTok or Instagram or any other platform. So how do we like show people that journalism is valuable, and how do we define this like role of our industry in this new world? Sorry, to give you such an open answer, the world has changed. And it's not a generational change. This isn't about Gen Z. It's about everyone being able to post content online. So what are we giving people as journalists that other people are not?
Finally, I wanted to know about the stories that meant the most to Anarte, not just as a reporter, but as a person, a queer person.
I think two of the stories that have marked me the most recently have been the two short documentaries that we published this year. One of them we filmed in Kenya, and it was about LGBTQ plus asylum seekers in Kenya. And they live in a legal limbo, and they live in conditions that I have been very lucky to never really see in my life, at least so closely. And when I was there, it was just like eye-opening, and obviously heartbreaking, but also just talk to them about their dreams and see the human ability to dream even in those conditions. Another story that really touched me was we went to Namibia and we filmed this short documentary about the impact of the current US administration's health cuts, global health cuts, on Namibia's trans community. I actually didn't know until we started researching this story that for many trans people in Namibia, it is simply not possible to go to a state clinic or hospital because you're going to be laughed at. You're going to be discriminated against. You're going to like suffer even violence. In general, when no matter which topic you're working on, to me, it all comes down to empathy and to like doing a kind of journalism that is empathetical to the people that are being covered. That yes, your journalistic values, which in our case at TRF, the Reuters values of integrity, independence, freedom of bias, you should always keep those values. And at the same time, I try to do a journalism that is empathetic towards the communities that are being covered.
I'd like to thank Enrique Inarte for sharing his insights as a journalist covering the LGBTQ community worldwide. Find him at context.news. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Check out one of Inarte's popular TikTok videos on our website, thiswayout.org. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Sarah Montague and David Hunt and produced by Brian DeShazer. David Hunt produced this week's feature. Chubby Checker, America, The Who, and Brander performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Richard Merck and Brad Payton, celebrating their 50 years together, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WOZO Knoxville, Tennessee, CHSR, Fredericton, New Brunswick, KUGS, Bellingham, Washington, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
This is so hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What is this old-time music?
I feel so proud of myself.
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It feels very hipster.
That's the worst thing.
Look at how humanity has used their intellect.
Self-help radio, a different theme explored with music and talk every week. Tuesdays, midnight to 3 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
She came from Kansas with a sound that shook, or should I say rocked, contemporary Christian music.
I wanna know you. I'm better than I do.
At the end of the day, art, to me, at its finest, reflects who we are and what we're experiencing. And it's not always about making a commentary or leading you to a particular destination. It's just an insight into that day and that moment in time. I love it when I can make a grown man cry.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Kenya court orders protections for transgender people, gay CDC hero resigns with RFK Jr. protesters, and Jennifer Knapp's Christian rock journeys from Kansas to Oz and back. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 30th, 2025. A court in Kenya has ordered lawmakers to protect the rights of transgender people. The victorious ruling for trans woman Shais Chepkosgei is being called a first on the African continent. Chepkosgei is identified in court documents only as SC. She's been living in her affirmed gender since childhood and competed in women's athletics as a marathon runner while living abroad. However, while visiting Moy Teaching and Referral Hospital in the city of Eldoret in 2019, she was arrested and charged with impersonation. She was taken to a women's prison and strip searched. A court ordered a gender determination process that included a genital examination, hormone testing, blood sampling, and radiological testing. Her medical records were later leaked to local media. The rights group Transgender Education and Advocacy backed Chepkosgei's lawsuit against the Kenya Prison Service and the Eldoret Hospital. She charged that the treatment she faced was unconstitutional and that her rights to privacy and dignity had been violated. Eldoret High Court Justice Ruben N. Niyokunde agreed with SC. He wrote that her freedom from inhuman and degrading treatment had also been violated and awarded her 1 million Kenyan shillings, about $7,700 in damages. Niyokunde also ordered the government to address the rights of trans Kenyans. The legislature can either amend the pending intersex persons bill or introduce transgender protection separately. Speaking for the queer rights group Jinsiangu, Lalin Unger told Mamba Online he's looking for clear legal recognition of gender identity, protect against discrimination in employment, housing, healthcare, and education, and provide access to public services without bias or harassment. Hostility towards LGBTQ people runs high in Kenya. The East African nation offers no legal protections. Same-gender sex is criminalized. Sexual and gender minorities are shunned by society, and verbal and physical abuse is routine. Trans people cannot legally change gender. The National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission won its right to official legal recognition as a non-governmental organization in the Kenyan Supreme Court in 2023 after years of litigation. It's not clear whether Justice Niyokunde's ruling can be appealed or how lawmakers will respond to his order.
You are the people that protect America, and America needs to see that you are the people that protect America, and we are going to be your loudest advocates.
Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis was cheered as a hero when he departed the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention along with other CDC leaders who resigned on August 27th. The bold gay immunization and respiratory diseases official most recently led the U.S. response to Mpox. Now, he's another casualty of President Donald Trump's war on science and truth. Daskalakis and his compatriots walked out on the heels of the administration's attempt to fire CDC Director Susan Menares. She's resisting. Her lawyers point to her refusal to rubber stamp what they called unscientific, reckless directives from Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The secretary, with no professional experience in medicine or healthcare, has denied the effectiveness of vaccines. In his blistering resignation letter, Dr. Daskalakis said in part, "After much contemplation and reflection on recent developments and perspectives brought to light by Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I find that the views he and his staff have shared challenge my ability to continue in my current role at the agency and in the service of the health of the American people." He called out the agency for radical non-transparency, unskilled manipulation of data, and charged his bosses with being people of dubious intent and more dubious scientific rigor. As Deputy Health Commissioner in New York City at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, the 51-year-old doctor championed specific outreach to the LGBTQ+ community. He then became the Biden administration's director of the CDC's Division of HIV and AIDS Prevention. His confrontational style drives the far-right crazy with his prolific pentagram tattoos, leather gear, and suggestive thirst-trapped social media posts. His resignation letter went on to cite, "The recklessness of the administration in their efforts to erase transgender populations, cease critical domestic and international HIV programming, and terminate key research to support equity as part of my decision." Dr. Daskalakis told The Advocate, "I gave up my job as a red flag. This is a five-alarm fire. If people don't act now, ideology will fully consume science."
Illinois outspoken Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker says he likes going on offense and not being on defense.
The state of Illinois today, I am announcing, is launching a first-of-its-kind legal hotline for LGBTQ individuals across the state. Well,
The debut of Illinois Pride Connect came soon after the Trump administration pulled funding for a federal queer youth suicide prevention hotline.
Illinois Pride Connect will provide resources on health care and education, on immigration, social services, family protections, and beyond. It will answer frequently asked questions. It will inform individuals of their rights and provide advocacy tools. Together, we are fighting ignorance with information. We're fighting cruelty with compassion.
The state jump-started funding of the helpline with a $250,000 investment and $100,000 in private donations. Additional funding has come from nonprofit organizations like the Illinois Department of Health and Human Services, the Legal Counsel for Health Justice, and the queer advocacy group Equality Illinois. Illinois Pride Connect operates in both English and Spanish from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. local time Mondays through Thursdays. Find them online at ilprideconnect.org.
A U.S. federal judge is fed up with Artemis Langford's Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority sisters trying to boot her out of their University of Wyoming chapter. Disgruntled alumni members who objected to the acceptance of a trans woman got their first taste of District Judge Alan B. Johnson's justice in 2023. He wrote in his original ruling, "Nothing in the bylaws or the standing rules require Kappa to narrowly define the words women or woman to include only individuals born with a certain set of reproductive organs." Kappa Kappa Gamma's definition of women was revised to include trans women in 2015 by the National Kappa Fraternity Council. Langford became its first transgender sister 7 years later. About a year after losing on appeal, the plaintiffs refiled their lawsuit challenging Langford's membership. An exasperated Johnson restated that he did not intend to interfere in the sorority's valid interpretation of its own bylaws. He dismissed the case on August 22nd with prejudice, which means that the complaint cannot be brought before any judge again.
Finally,
I played in the AFL for 10 years for the West Coast Eagles, and I'm a bisexual man.
Former Perth-based West Coast Eagles defender Mitch Brown shook up the sport this week by coming out as bi in the Daily Aus. He says the pressure of hiding his sexuality contributed to his decision to retire in 2016 at the age of 28. No former or current male player has ever publicly identified as gay or bi in the league's 129-year history. Toxic masculinity continues to prevail. A highly offensive homophobic slur against an opponent got high-profile player Isaac Rankin suspended for several matches in June, essentially ending his season. Brown declined to condemn the insult.
On the field, you're trying to beat your opponent, right? Trying to win, and the best way to do that is to show your strength. One of the ways you do that is to belittle your opponent.
His former Eagles teammates were enthusiastic in their support, writing in a social media post, "We love you, Mitch. We're proud of you and how you're living your values to make footy and our society a better place." Brown stepped into his new role with grace.
It is such a privilege, the fact that I can sit here and say I'm comfortable and strong in talking about my sexuality.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending August 30, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian Teshazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I'm better than I do.
In the genre-fied music industry, it's rare for an artist to remind us that Christian and lesbian can harmonize quite nicely, thank you. One singer-songwriter has been striking that chord for longer than you might imagine on a journey from Kansas to Oz and back again. Jennifer Knapp talks with This Way Out's David Hunt about the unifying power of music and working for equality in faith communities.
Came from Kansas with a sound that shook, or should I say rocked, contemporary Christian music in the late 1990s. Breathtaking in her honesty, at times raucous, hell-bent, she said, on pounding her guitar into splinters. At other times serene, singing with the simple joy and simple faith of a new believer. A fresh, strong female voice in an industry that had fixed ideas about a woman's place in society. Jennifer Knapp challenged those conventions and carved out her own space, eventually, outside the insular world of Christian music. Today she's out, proud, and sometimes loud, writing and performing for a new generation of fans, with songs that speak to the joys and trials of modern life. Of love, longing, loss, and a recurring theme for Knapp, freedom.
In my blood, the son of Kansas sky. Turn the Flint Hills gold and burn them dry. All the roads I had to take to make good my escape.
I'm David Hunt. Jennifer Knapp isn't in Kansas anymore. At the height of her success as a Christian rocker, she found the pressures and pace too much for her sanity or her soul. In 2002, she packed up her guitars and moved to Oz, Australia, to clear her head and nourish her heart. She found the courage to return to the United States 7 years later. Still a rocker, still a Christian, but no longer part of the contemporary Christian music scene. In 2010, she released a new studio album titled Letting Go and let the world know that she's a proud lesbian.
You've been around my neck so burdensome. You say I've changed you.
Today, Knapp lives in Nashville, America's legendary home of country music, with her longtime partner. She's an author, speaker, and founder of Inside Out Faith, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advocating for LGBTQ+ rights within faith communities. Knapp is about to begin a 3-month tour of 32 cities across the U.S., but took time from a busy schedule to talk with me about her music, her faith, and Kansas. Our conversation got off to a rocky start. The 90s was an exciting time for Christian music.
You're already dating me. Thanks, David. It's lovely. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it just totally cracks me up. I love the 90s, so.
What I was trying to say, without making it seem like ancient history, is that a lot of new groups emerged in contemporary Christian music in the 1990s. Groups that sounded more like Pearl Jam than Debbie Boone. Groups like Jars of Clay, Kateman's Call, and Third Day. Then there was Jennifer Knapp with her debut studio album, Kansas. Nobody had heard anything quite like it before on the Christian music scene. When she first toured in 1998, she opened for two popular all-male groups, Audio Adrenaline and DC Talk. Nearly every night for 4 months, Knapp recalled in her 2014 book, Facing the Music, I had to walk out onto a huge, dimly lit stage in front of over 1,000 amped up, mostly teenage, Christian music fans. All of them were there to have their heads blown off. And that's what she did.
was definitely hanging out in Broland, and as the only chick hanging around in that environment, I really got to experience a lot of latitude in the sense that as an artist and as a creator and as an understandable different voice inside of that space, I did really feel like I got a sense of purchase in when I showed up and I did my thing, that people were like, oh, wow, like this is a bit of a fresh breath.
And Kansas sold more than 500,000 copies.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it went gold. It was the shock of my life, really.
So what do you think it was in your music, in you, that people connected with?
You know, it's been 25 years, over 25 years. So I've, through that time, so many people have shared with me their experience of this record. When they talk about that record and the songs from that record, most of what people share with me are the stories of their lives. It makes sense because when I was, you know, as a kid writing those songs in my college apartment shared with, you know, five other women, that's what I was doing. I was just kind of writing these prayers and these anxieties toward God and wasn't in any way crafting a record for people to listen to. I was just having a private and personal experience. And somehow it's kind of wild how that translated down the line for people kind of just using those songs in the same way.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
From glass alabaster, she poured out the depths of her soul.
I'm David Hunt, continuing my conversation with singer-songwriter Jennifer Knapp.
Christ, would you wait if her heart of trees know?
In 2024, Knapp released Kansas 25, a new recording of her seminal debut studio album, Kansas. I asked Knapp what she heard when she listened to her performance on the original album and how that compared to her interpretation of the songs 25 years later on Kansas 25. She was in her early 20s when the original album was produced. I told her that I heard a difference. To me, her performance on the new album is deeper, more layered, perhaps carrying the weight of all the living and learning she's done since the late 90s.
Daddy, daddy, do you miss me? The way I called upon your knees. Those childish games of hide and seek now seem a million miles away.
I deeply appreciate that you've had that experience with the project, because that was really the biggest motivation in going and re-recording that. And I guess maybe in the form of a question, it was like, I know I've been through a lot in the 25 years since that kid wrote that record. And in a lot of ways, I recognized, at least in my own person, that I was the same person, but I was also different, and not in some like wildly different way. I mean, I think my theology has evolved. I think the way that I approach my spiritual life and journey has evolved, but it still hasn't, there hasn't been a gap. There hasn't been like a severance between those two points, right? Between the person that started it and the person I was now. And so the curiosity was, surely that has to sound different. Surely I sound different. And I think the personal curiosity to me was that if I went back and I performed that, would that connection prove to still be there? And also, would it also prove to sound and feel different the same way that you're describing? And I'm kind of personalizing that, but I was also thinking about that, and this is the real motivation to actually going and recording it, was with, particularly with my coming out. I came out as gay in 2010. And at that point, part of the argument was like, being gay and being a person of faith, particularly inside of evangelical communities, was often equated with, by some of the conservative gatekeepers, as a loss of faith, like an absolute failure. And I'm like, that's wildly not true. we're all out here demonstrating that, right? These audiences of people who've had like these, whether it's coming out and being gay or a divorce or just some critical moment of, I don't believe in heaven or hell anymore, or I don't believe that the Bible is infallible, or all these kind of little nuances inside of the religious experiences that sometimes make us feel like we have to be disconnected if we're having those thoughts or those experiences. And with this record, I was meeting so many people who've gone through that experience and saying, weirdly, this music is, it means something different to me now than it did when I was 20.
The newer albums, there's a lot about sort of personal people-to-people type relationships and the struggles of loving and living with somebody. But let's just say they're less overtly religious.
As an artist, it's been really liberating to be able to continue to write without feeling like I have to uphold specifically Christianity, like I'm servicing Christianity, but rather to have what most of us experience in our daily lives is like, what is it like to live? And like, at the end of the day, art, to me, at its finest, reflects who we are and what we're experiencing. And it's not always about making a commentary or leading you to a particular destination. It's just an insight into that day and a moment in time.
Yeah, and you sort of anticipated one of my questions, which was, you know, if I was writing music, which I don't, I would want to have something figured out and then share it with people. But I get the sense in a lot of your songs that you haven't figured out the answer, that you're sort of exploring it and bringing me along for the ride. And I don't know if I like that sometimes. You know, some of these I got kind of teary on some of these because I'm like, you know, it's sad.
I love it. I love it when I can make a grown man cry. Like that's a pinnacle, really. But now I think when I sit down to write, I'm often in my mind is a picture of somebody else or, you know, sometimes myself, but going, man, what's going on here? And just diving into the feeling and the moment of that experience and not thinking about the outcome, but really trying to capture that moment.
What does the future hold for Jennifer Knapp?
Starting in September, I'm out on the road all through the Midwest and the West Coast. So I've got 35 some odd shows. So make sure and stop by jenniferknapp.com to see the fullness of the touring schedule. And I'm also really excited because I just pieced together a little 5-song EP of just some of my favorite songwriters who've been inspiring to me. Tracy Chapman, Patty Griffin, Lucinda Williams, Mary Chapin Carpenter, and an Australian folk artist by the name of Paul Kelly. I did it with a producer, Matt Odemark from Jars of Clay. So we just popped in together and did this fun little thing. So I'll be performing those out on the tour. Make sure and see if you can meet me in real life. I love getting to see and meet people out on the road. It's gonna be a good fall.
I'd like to thank Jennifer Knapp for sharing her time and story for this program. She's a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter, author, speaker, and founder of Inside Out Faith, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advocating for LGBTQ rights within faith communities. Learn more about her music, her writings, and her upcoming tour at jenniferknapp.com. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
You can reminisce, but you can't bring it back. Oh, we'll find our dreams littered on the path. And try something new and forget the past.
You can hear more from singer-songwriter Jennifer Knapp on the extended podcast edition of her conversation with David Hunt at thiswayout.org. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael Taylor Gray and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. David Hunt produced this week's feature. Creedence Clearwater Revival and Jennifer Knapp performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Richard Merck and Brad Payton celebrating their 50th year together, Steve Sims of Seattle, Washington, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on 2BAY, Byron Bay, New South Wales, KUCR, Riverside, California, WDRT, Viracocha, Wisconsin, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1998.